It's now time for the Fantasy 411 podcast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Fantasy 411. I'm Matthew Leach, talking fantasy baseball with MLB.com's lead fantasy writer, Fred Zinke. And I think there's a pretty good chance that by the time we talk next week, we are going to have some really interesting transactions to talk about. At the moment, we have some lesser transactions, but still some things to talk about, so we're going to get right to it. Randall Grichuk goes to Toronto, and there are a couple of, actually a few different pieces to this. It's really interesting. It was a baseball trade. It was not really a financial trade, and that's, you know, makes it interesting to start with. Bunch of different pieces to this. What I want to start with, because it's drawn a lot of conversation, is Grichuk kind of took some shots at the way he and other young players were handled in St. Louis on his way out the door. And I wonder, is that something you put anything at all into? When a player says, and this is sort of as we assess Grichuk for Toronto for 2018, when a player like him who did not play every day, but maybe played more than you thought, got a decent number of at-bats, says, look, I felt this pressure, and we all thought we had to get on base three times to play the next day, and then he goes to a place where it looks like he will play every day. Do you put any stock in that? In the idea that maybe he'll be a little freer, maybe he'll be a little more under control, maybe he'll press a little less, and maybe, most importantly, that will show up in production?
Yeah, I think the general concept, I think I could put something in. I don't know if like his kind of complaining or concern about it moves the needle for me at all, but I can see definitely the point. Like, he was on a team with a really deep outfield, with a lot of veterans on the team, you know, with high expectations for the team. And, you know, I can see a point to that for sure. I don't think he's probably the first young player to ever say that when you're in a log jam and you're trying to prove yourself in the majors and you're a boomer bust type hitter, which Grichuk is in the first place. So you're probably more prone to going 0-for-4, you know, than the average player. Then it really gets into your head. I could see that for sure. And in Toronto, I do think that he will be completely on his own in right field. I expect Grichuk to play. As long as he's playing fine, I expect him to play pretty much every day.
So that, to me, the thing about Grichuk is we've got like 1,000 plate appearances almost over the last 2 years, and in the end, he's been pretty consistent over those two seasons. We've got a pretty good idea what this guy is. He is a low OBP, 240 hitting slugger. You know, I think the one thing that kind of separates him from a few guys in that general class is that he's had 5 steals and 6 steals the past 2 seasons. And that's not a huge amount, but it's a little boost. The thing I wonder about Grichuk, he's 25, and so, you know, theoretically a guy who could still have some development left. But I would caution people, I'm kind of going to talk out of two sides of my mouth here, because on the one hand, as we talked about last week, there is something about aggressive sluggers who go to Toronto. There has seemed to be a pattern that those guys have often worked out. With that said, you know, I would really caution people to think that there's too much untapped potential there, just because it's not like this guy had 200 at-bats either the last 2 years. He got 400 at-bats, and his final numbers were really similar, and so I'm a little hesitant to think that there's a lot more in there aside from, you know, maybe another 5 home runs if he gets another, you know, 80 at-bats. Where do you come down on the question of kind of what Grichuk will be turned loose in Toronto?
Yeah, I'm slightly favorable on him. I think you hit the nail on the head when you said a few more home runs. So if you take his home run pace across each of the past 2 seasons, and you're right, he was incredibly consistent. So if you take that home run pace and just push it to about 520 at-bats, which I think is pretty reasonable. Like, I think their outfield is Grichuk in right field, Pilar in center, Granderson and Pierce splitting time in left, and then Teoscar Hernandez in the minors until there's an injury, unless they make another move this offseason. But I think that's the way it will be right now. If you just push that home run total to 520 at-bats, you get about 28 homers. And then if you maybe put in some park effect boost from now being at Rogers Center, there's some nice parks on the road in the American League, maybe now you're at 30, maybe even 32 home runs. So, and at that point, 32 home runs, a half a dozen steals, he becomes pretty interesting. Even if he does hit 240, at that point, he's a mixed league option. I mean, we'll wait and see where he is in the lineup. And then, like you mentioned, if you want to get just a little bit more optimistic, whether it's going all the way back to Jose Bautista, Edwin Encarnacion. Josh Donaldson went to another level once he was in Toronto. I'm not saying Grichuk's one of those players, but the Blue Jays have had Justin Smoke last year. Like, they've had success with power hitters. If they can make Grichuk just a little bit better, maybe 30 to 32 home runs becomes 33 or 34. Maybe the batting average becomes 255 or 260, and now you're really looking at something.
Okay, so we're kind of looking at that's optimistic. If I give you an over-under of 28, what are you taking?
I'm going to take the over, but that's because I'm feeling a little optimistic on him. I think 28 is like that is his home run pace across him just playing the full season. So I think 28 is like a nice set for the over-under, which makes him, I think, like a late-round pick. And if you're looking late round, why not grab a boomer bust type like Grichuk instead of just like a Melky Cabrera?
Sure, I think that's fair. Does this pretty much remove Teoscar Hernandez from most consideration?
Yeah, I think so. In an AL-only league, you might draft him and put him on your bench and hope that he finds a way onto the team. But I think it's best for his development probably for him to just play full-time at the beginning of the year. It's best for the Blue Jays just asset management, unless they can unload Steve Pierce. But I don't even think that's necessarily for sure puts Hernandez on the roster because Ezekiel Carrera has a guaranteed contract of $1.9 million for this year, so he has a decent chance to make the team. Granderson, they didn't sign him for $5 million to put him on the bench all the time. So I think Hernandez is waiting for an injury to Pilar, an injury to Grichuk, or an injury to Granderson before he gets up. At that point, he's interesting, but for now, I think he's not.
So we now look at the other side of this deal. I mean, there was a surplus in St. Louis, so it's not like this opens up a starting job for somebody who didn't previously have one. It's not really like that because they had a lot of guys and they were sort of dealing from a position of strength to shore up their bullpen. But is there anybody who you do like more now that there are at least more at-bats to go around than you did a few days ago?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and it's Jose Martinez, and there was an article on our site, I think 2 days ago, earlier this week, where I believe it was titled the best hitter you've never heard of. And that's an interesting way to describe Martinez because I think to a lot of the baseball population, they haven't really heard of him. But this is someone who had 307 plate appearances last year and an 897 OPS. And not with extreme batted ball luck. Like Jose Martinez has a lot of, seems to be a late bloomer who has some serious skills. Now, he doesn't have a starting job right now, but with Grichuk gone, Martinez could be someone who gets in the lineup 3 or 4 days a week between all the outfield spots and first base. He could be someone who pinch hits basically any day that he doesn't start. I think he's not a 10-team option yet, but I think he's borderline 12, definitely 15, and it's a situation where all it will take will be an injury to one of about four starting players, and all of a sudden Martinez becomes someone you really want to own.
What do you think is a reasonable guess right now for at-bats for him?
Well, I'd say last year the at-bats were 272. I would say maybe reasonable right now is about 350, 375. I'd say 375. But, again, it's almost like the late-round pick of Grichuk where you're just – that 375 is not going to help you in a mixed league, but it's putting him on your bench for a spurt of time where he plays every day, where he plays like a 550 at-bat player at that pace for a month or two if someone's injured. I mean, maybe none of the Cardinals outfielders will get hurt, but one of those outfielders is Dexter Fowler, who gets hurt almost every year. And at that point, Martinez can step right into a starting job.
Right. We stay with outfielders. The Giants bring in Austin Jackson. And this has been a sort of an interesting story to follow over a couple of days here because at first it looked like he's going to play every day, but you read some of the coverage from out there, they may not be done. And it's possible that Austin Jackson will kind of fill the role he's filled in recent years, fourth outfielder, occasional starter, but not a guy who gets 500 at-bats. So it's kind of hard to analyze where you rank him right now without knowing what else the Giants are going to do. I mean, there's still a lot of outfielders out there. There are still plenty of options, and they have shown a willingness to make moves. They didn't pay him a whole ton of money, so you could see that being a precursor still to another move. So what do you do with Jackson right now? I mean, most people don't have to know right now, so that's a good position to be in if you just don't have to know. We're just sort of speculating. But, let's start with this. If Jackson is a primary starter, if he is, if not every day, at least a primary guy, How much do you like him in San Francisco in 18?
I think overall not very much. Even if he was the primary starter, I mean, I think some owners will see that he hit 318 last year and get excited, but that came with a 385 BABIP. That's just not sustainable. He's probably more like, he's a career 275 hitter. I think that's probably maybe even a little on the high end right now. If I was going to set an over-under, I'd probably set it more around 265 or 270. He hasn't hit 10 homers in a season since 2013. He's not much of a base stealer anymore. You know, five total in the last 2 years, and that's still with over 500 plate appearances. I think I'm coming around on the Giants lineup a bit, but I think even if he was the regular center fielder, I think I would be capped at kind of a late round pick in a 15 team mixed league. Do you think that's too pessimistic or?
No, I don't at all. And I really, yeah. You know, Jackson's been a player I've liked for a long time, but you know, the one thing that excites you from a fantasy perspective about what he did last year was batting average, and that's the one thing that I don't really see as repeatable, you know, particularly in San Francisco. I like the player. I like him as a part of a major league outfield. I'm not crazy about him on my fantasy team. And again, yeah. There's the other factor that even if he's playing regularly, which we don't know.
That's right. And if I had to guess if he's playing regularly, I would guess that he won't be if someone is drafting really soon. But like I say, the upside is so limited. So we've kind of gone the full gamut of late round options right here with Grichuk, the upside so high, with Jose Martinez, the upside so high, even with Teoscar Hernandez in a really deep league, at least there's high upside. With Jackson, there just isn't. NL only for sure. Like, he's fine because he won't hurt your batting average. He's fine as your fourth or fifth outfielder.
A couple of pieces of housekeeping. First of all, I want to let everybody know that we are now getting close enough to the season that next week we will start our position rankings here on the Fantasy 411. We will start with starting pitchers, and we will begin our position previews. So that's a good indication of where exactly we are at in this offseason. When we talk next week, it will be February, which means when we talk next week, it will be the month that pitchers and catchers report, and actually the month that spring training games start. We've got some early games this year, so just be ready. That time is coming real fast. Before we move on to talk prospects, we want to take a second to tell you about the StatCast podcast, a show dedicated to the analytics that drive front office decisions in the modern game. It's hosted by Mike Petriello and Matt Myers, and last week's episode discussed whether the Yankees' 2018 bullpen could be the best group of relievers in MLB history, and what StatCast says about free agent Todd Frazier. To hear all of that, download the show from Apple Podcasts or wherever else you get your podcasts by searching for StatCast Podcast, or go to www.statcastpodcast.com. I bet they will also talk Jose Martinez this week. That piece that you referenced, I believe, was a Mike Petriello piece about Jose Martinez. And that's definitely the kind of guy they will discuss. I think there's a real symbiosis between what they do and what we do, or at least a one-directional thing. There's real value. If you're interested in what we're talking about, then you should be interested in what they're talking about, because they can definitely provide insight on guys beyond the surface numbers.
That's right. And the Todd Frazier, I think, is an interesting conversation piece. I felt like in fantasy circles, when Frazier started hitting a lot of home runs, he became a bit of a fantasy darling and maybe briefly overvalued. Then people started seeing the flaws in his game, and then potentially has been written off. And I think there are some good points from StatCast that maybe it's not quite time to totally write him off yet.
And now we talk prospects, and I want to start with another promo for some of our teammates here at Team MLB. MLB Pipeline will release their updated top 100 prospects list on Saturday night. So this is not necessarily hand in hand with that. We don't have those for you, but some guys who are intriguing prospects, because this is a time to talk about prospects. But some guys we haven't maybe talked about that much. So Ryan McMahon, a very intriguing guy. I mean, anybody who could play regularly in Denver is intriguing. Looks like he might get some opportunity in Denver, and that's really the question. You know, I think if he plays, he's going to put up fantasy numbers that you like. So the question about McMahon is, do you think he's going to play?
Right now, he has a decent chance. If they don't add a veteran first baseman, then really the decision is, do they play Ian Desmond at first base or do they play him in left field? If they play him in left field, Austin McMahon's their first baseman. If they play him at first base, then David Dahl or Raimel Tapia would probably be their left fielder. So they have options. When you look at McMahon's numbers from last season, like he hit 355 in the minors, hit 20 home runs. As far as a late round pick for early drafters until we see his role, this is someone with massive upside where if they turned first base over to him and just said, hey, let's give him a shot for the initial couple months of the season, and if we're doing fine and he's not, we'll go out and grab a slugging first baseman, which is pretty easy to acquire in the summer. Then I think he's someone you really want, at least for the home weeks, and then see where you go from there. Do you think there's a chance that if McMahon gets the opportunity that he can hit right now?
I do think there's a chance. You know, I keep reading, it does not seem that Mark Reynolds is out of the picture in Denver yet. He had a nice year there. They seem to like him. That would be an issue. If they brought Mark Reynolds back, then that would certainly seem to eat into McMahon's opportunity. That would be a guy I would watch there because, again, he's expressed a desire to return there, and so I could see that. But if he plays, I think the only question with McMahon is the power. And it's not like he'll be a 15-home-run guy if he plays regularly. But, you know, even in some very good hitting environments, he's been more a 20-home-run kind of guy than a 30-35-home-run kind of guy. And that's a really good player, don't get me wrong. But, you know, the one thing I would say is don't go overboard even if he does get the opportunity. But he's a really intriguing player. A guy next that I actually saw when he was in college, Nick Senzel actually wrote a piece about it. You can probably find it on the Google machine if you hunt for that. Nick Senzel, I played his college ball at Tennessee, and I saw him here in Athens when they came to play Georgia a couple years ago. One of those guys that even in college just was so polished, looked so ready, even then had a good strike zone. He's just one of those guys that you watch him play, and you just don't see a lot of weaknesses. He's just a good hitter, and it shows up in his minor league numbers. I mean, he's hit a combined 315 coming up through the minors. Again, not shocking for a guy who was a star in the SEC. You'd expect him to succeed in the low minors, but he hit 340 at Double A last year at 22. So you know that tells you this is not a guy who's just destroying younger overmatch competition. He's got a nice strike zone. He's got a little power. And could fit in a few different places, I think. And that's, to me, you know, the interesting thing about Senzel. And that's kind of why, you know, he's played only third base in the minors. But he's a guy where if they had a need, I wouldn't be shocked if they slotted him in somewhere else. Kind of a fluid situation with a lot of guys in Cincinnati. Do you think Senzel gets an opportunity early in the year, or do you think this is more a guy to keep an eye on for later in the year?
I think somewhere in the middle. If I had to guess his, you know, debut date, I'm going to put it somewhere in June. I think he's someone who won't, break spring training with the team. I don't see him as like an April call-up unless Eugenio Suarez, you know, suffered a long-term injury or something like that, and they just went for it with him. But, I mean, the Reds are still, I think, mostly thinking long-term with their roster. But I expect him to go down to the minors, hit for average, show some power, and then push his way up either through an injury and he gets his opportunity, or maybe they just make room for him. Suarez is a good player. He's not like a franchise cornerstone. Jose Peraza, same thing. Scooter Gennett, same thing. And with Suarez able to play shortstop and Peraza or third, and Peraza can play second or short, there's a lot of ways to get him up to the majors. So I think it'll happen. I think we'll see him, you know, earlier, maybe a little earlier than, say, Rafael Devers, who's another third baseman, came up last year. Devers was the beginning of August. I could see Senzel a little earlier than that, and I think beginning of August, like, at the absolute latest.
A guy who has been a fast riser and really came into his power last year, and I think that's the intriguing thing about Kyle Tucker. You know, he showed speed from the start. He hit 285 at age 19 in full season ball. You know, those are some really encouraging things. And then last year, the power came. He hit 16 home runs in 72 games at Double A, and a guy who was already a really well-regarded prospect is suddenly a really well-regarded prospect. Left-handed hitter. There is still some notion that the Astros might want one more left-handed bat. Is there an opportunity for him right out of the gate if they don't do anything? And how much do you like him knowing just what we know now?
Yeah, I would be shocked if he was with them, you know, right out of the gate. What makes Tucker interesting is the power speed combo, because there aren't a lot of players delivering that right now. 25 homers, 21 steals last year. So when he does get promoted because of that possibility where he can help you with home runs and steals, you need to jump on him right away. They still have Derek Fisher, who is an option, you know, either to start the season with the team or just get the first call when they need someone. With Marwin Gonzalez being so flexible with his fielding, like when they want Tucker up, they can probably make it happen. I would probably put him behind McMahon and Senzel on my draft board right now if I'm talking like late round picks in deep leagues or stash options. But if he gets up, because he can steal bases and that lineup being so good, the potential would be really high for him. Do you agree with me that would you, if you were taking, you know, if you're in some of these offseason 50-round drafts, which are getting more popular, would you draft him before or after the two corner infielders we've talked about so far?
If we're talking this year only, then yeah, he goes later. I mean, his upside is ludicrous. He's the guy, out of the guys we've talked about so far, he's the one who in a year or two could be a really high pick. He's a guy who could be a serious impact player, who could do a whole lot of different things, really exciting player. You know, and I think he's got the highest ceiling, but I also think he's got the lowest floor in 2018 of these guys.
Mm-hmm.
Willy Adames in Tampa Bay. Well, not literally in Tampa Bay because then he'd be wet. A lot of transition with the Rays over the last 2 years, a lot of turnover. Adames had a nice year at AAA last year, but had more a helps the ball club year than a helps your fantasy team year. 277, 10 homers, 11 steals, 360 on base. He has been primarily a shortstop, but he's seen a little bit of time at second, a little bit of time at third. You know, a lot of flux in that Rays infield, and there certainly appear to be opportunities. My concern with Adames is just, you know, I don't really know what the fantasy value is for him right out of the gate, even if he does play regularly. You know, he's kind of the opposite of some of these guys, where I do like the opportunity. I'm just not sure what the fantasy upside is for him in the short term. Am I missing something with him in the near term?
No, I don't think so. I could see Adames being a little more attractive in the only league. So, for example, comparing Adames and Kyle Tucker, Adames might be a little more attractive in an AL only just because he's likely to get twice or three times as many plate appearances this year than Tucker. And that matters in an AL only league. I think he's ready. He spent all last season in AAA. This is the time probably to give him a shot. The Rays don't have, you know, long-term pieces really in that infield. So I think he gets his shot for at some point, probably even by June, I think at the latest. I think he gets a chance to really play. But when that happens, first of all, he's not worth stashing, and second of all, when that happens, I think in a 10 and 12 team league, you probably don't rush out and pick him up. I'm sure we'll discuss him on the podcast when that happens, but I don't think he's someone you rush out to pick up unless he is showing much better skill in the minors at the start of this season. And I really put him on the list for that reason. He's very high in prospect rankings for a couple reasons. He's major league ready, and he's someone, like you said, who helps the ball club more than he helps your fantasy team. So I think owners don't want to go overboard with him.
I do think, you know, one thing with Adames, and because we are as always talking about humans here, not only humans playing the game, but humans making the decisions. You know, he seems like the kind of guy who is not going to play himself into a manager's doghouse. You know, he's got a nice strike zone. He gets on base. I believe he's a pretty well-regarded defensive player. And so, you know, I don't think he's the kind of guy who's going to frustrate a manager into saying, I don't care how much upside this guy's got, he's not playing for me. So I suspect that if he breaks in, he'll play. And he's been a really consistent player from year to year. In the minors, he is a 270 hitter with a nice on-base percentage with mild to moderate power and doubles power. And that's one thing, you know, maybe you hope that as he turns 20, as he goes from 20 and 21 to 22, 23, 24, those 30 doubles a year turn into 25 doubles and 15 home runs. He would be far from the first person to do that. But yeah, I think he is a more of a low ceiling kind of guy.
If we also want to talk about one surrounding kind of variable with Adames also, it's that he'll likely hit low in the lineup when he comes up.
Yeah.
And the Rays don't project to having a good lineup. Yeah. Whereas Tucker, would hit in a great lineup. McMahon would hit in a great lineup. Senzel could even go straight into a premium lineup spot at, like, pretty quickly. Adamas probably hitting 7th, 8th, 9th on a team that won't probably be among the league leaders in runs scored.
Another guy who the team just doesn't seem to be done yet, and that sort of leads to some uncertainty, Miguel Andujar had a really nice year, split between double and triple A last year, and hit for average and moderate power across two levels, and has really emerged as one of the more intriguing prospects. But again, we don't know, like, are the Yankees going to add another infielder? Are they going to go with Torres? Are they going to go with Andujar? It's just hard to know what the mix there is going to look like. And until we do, it's hard to advise people to jump in too much. He does seem like a guy that if he does play, he'll play really well. But, you know, Andujar's a guy, it wouldn't shock me if he didn't really get a starting job all year. So how do you assess a guy like that where the swings in opportunity are so wide?
That's right. And in an article on our site yesterday, we're really promoting things on our site, I think, more than ever for some reason this week. But in an article on our site yesterday, John Paul Morosi talked about how the Yankees maybe have about $15 million in their budget left to spend for this offseason. And are they going to try to use that money on one star-type player, or are they going to spread it out? If they signed a star-type player, all of a sudden, maybe they don't add a veteran third baseman, assuming that star-type player is not a third baseman, and maybe he gets a real shot. He'll probably hit 7th, 8th, 9th in the lineup, but in that good lineup, at that point, I think maybe he's an option, definitely, and then in AL-only leagues, and in 15-team mixed leagues, at least someone to consider in the late rounds and hope that he could be a high-average hitter in the majors right away. If the Yankees go the spread-it-out route and grab a veteran second baseman, a veteran third baseman, you know, maybe a depth starter, then all of a sudden, you're right, then he goes down to, I'm not sure if he'll even get 100 major league plate appearances this year. So I mean, this is one that will sort itself out. But if he is a starting player in one of the expected better lineups in baseball, then I think you have to consider him in a 15-team league.
Sure. A starting pitcher who I like a lot, both based on performance, but also because he's really just a fun pitcher to watch. Brent Honeywell, who we saw at the Futures game last year, really lit it up. He's got that screwball. He's got some charisma. He's a really fun pitcher. He's a guy that I think we all hope emerges as a regular and a good player just because he'd be a fun guy to have around. The question is, do we think he's going to do that? Do we think that Brent Honeywell cracks the opening day rotation? I wouldn't rule it out. I wouldn't rule it in either. But, you know, do we think he does that? And if so, how much confidence do you have that he will perform consistently enough to hold that spot and to be somebody you'd want on your fantasy team?
Yeah, I'd say I'm pretty interested in him, especially it's the strikeout rate, 11.3 K per nine last year. The strikeout rate gives him a lot of upside. And you're right, there may be inconsistencies, but when we're struggling to find useful starters, a late-round pick on someone who could be really, really good is a wise pick. And if I had to guess, I would guess he doesn't break camp as in the starting rotation, but that he's up at some point during April or May. Because if we just go with the odds these days, whether it's Chris Archer, whether it's Jake Odorizzi, Jake Faria, Matt Andrees, Blake Snell, one of them ends up on the disabled list the first 2 months of the year. Honeywell gets his chance, and then I think there's a good chance at that point he pitches well enough to stay in the rotation. Whether he's a fantasy star or not, we'll see, but at least well enough to stay in the rotation. I'm pretty excited about him, and I think even in a 10-team league, if my bench had enough size, I would be interested in putting him on it. Would you go that high on him? Like, I know you play in some 10-team leagues. Would you put him, maybe consider him on your bench?
I couldn't do that now without having more confidence in the opportunity. You know, if I even saw, you know, he's one of two guys for the fifth spot, then maybe I'm sneak stashing him then. But without that, especially because even if the performance upside is high, that may not be a good team, you know. And I know we say, everybody says, and it's smart, don't chase wins, and that's true. But on the other hand, you have to ding a guy if you're really worried about him getting just no offensive support. And I think that's very true with nearly any Rays starter this year. They could be pretty dire offensively.
No, that's very true. You're right. Expecting him to have a high win total this year is way too much. Expecting any of those Rays starters to win.
Right.
And like you said, it could happen. Chris Archer could win 18 games this year, but it's highly unlikely. And although you're right that when people say don't chase wins, if you go back and look at the leaders in wins from last season, not all of them, but a lot of them play on teams with winning records.
Yeah. And so as we close this week out, we kind of use this as a next week on the 411, because next week we are going to talk the top tiers of starting pitchers, and this week we are going to talk about the guys who fall just short. So if there's somebody you wonder why didn't we talk about him, it might mean he gets talked about next week. We've done this with a couple of different positions recently. These are guys who will not make those top tiers, but that might be interesting late-round guys. We start with a group that is really wide-ranging here. Jake Odorizzi, Felix Hernandez, Luis Gohara, Zach Davies, Tyler Chatwood. Man, there are ceilings and floors all over the place with that. Odorizzi feels like the guy who maybe has a combination of a nice ceiling and a nice floor, but the guy I'm really intrigued in here and the guy I want to hear what you think about is Gohara. I saw him a couple of times in Atlanta last year. He's really exciting. Guy's got a big arm. The Braves really seem to like him, too. Like, I think he's going to be a guy who's got a rotation spot. So how high are you on Gohara, and is there anybody else from this group that jumps out at you?
Yeah, I'm definitely interested in Gohara. I find the buzz on him is picking up. I don't think he's going to be a big draft day discount like I was hoping. Just the fact that he's in this group, and this group is mostly derived from early average draft position results. So I mean, he's already pushed his way up into a group of, that has an established starter like Odorizzi, that has an intriguing guy like Chatwood. Now, and there's some people who are really high on Chatwood now that he's with the Cubs. The name that's interesting to me for a couple of reasons is Felix Hernandez. And the reason is I feel like I've always been the low man on Felix Hernandez. I've almost never owned him in fantasy because I always have him ranked lower, even when he was really good, than everyone else does. When he started to fade, I jumped off quicker, I felt like, than anyone else did. That being said, like, I know what Hernandez's career consists of. Now that you can get him literally as like your last or second last, starter in a 10-team league and pretty close to that in a 12-team league, is there a potential for value there? Could he be someone who dips and then figures out a way to pitch with what he has now? I don't know if you think my optimism is totally misplaced with Hernandez, but is there a chance when we're talking about such a low acquisition cost, like $2 in an auction, that kind of thing? I mean, he certainly has he's not old. Like, I think he's 31, and he certainly has a resume that's totally different from everyone else on this list.
I get that, and I would not tell somebody not to if they saw that and they wanted to take a flyer on that. But, and I'm not going to boil a guy down to one number. With that said, here is Felix's FIP from 14 to 17. 2014, 256. 2015, 372. 2016, 463. 2017, 502. That's not everything, but that tells me that the underlying numbers have gone ugly just as much as the surface numbers have, and that's disconcerting. I guess what I would say is, look, the blow-up potential is low because, as you note, you're not going to pay a lot for him in an auction. You're not going to give up a high draft pick for him. And so in the end, the blow-up potential is not that high because you can just cut bait. But he is going to pitch, and even if he's bad, he's going to pitch. And so the concern to me is if you pick him up, how do you know when the time is to cut bait when the Mariners keep trotting him out there and he keeps pitching badly, if that's the case? That's the worry. Is some guys, they pitch badly, they're going to lose their jobs. Not Felix. He gives up 5 runs in 6 innings every start. He's still going to go out there.
That's right. I think, actually, I would draft him as a boomer bust late-round pick who I don't use for his initial starts unless the matchup's extremely favorable. And then what I'm looking for early in the season is I'm looking for strikeouts, and I'm looking for that pitch data on what his velocity is like. And if the velocity were to ever trend back up, then I'm really glad I drafted him. If it doesn't trend back up but I'm seeing some strikeouts, and a nice strikeout to walk ratio, then I'm interested again, because again, maybe he's figured out how to pitch with reduced velocity. I just look at the young age with him still and think maybe there's a bounce back. This isn't like me chasing, say, Adam Wainwright now and hoping that he can rediscover his form at his age. Hernandez is just still so young, and maybe all the innings have added up and he'll never come back. But I think in a late round perspective, I'd give him one more chance.
Second group here, Dan Straley, official Fantasy 411 weekly topic, Marco Estrada, Mike Leake, Sean Newcomb, Herman Marquez. I am not a Newcomb guy. I just really need to see some consistency from him. Out of this group, the guy I like is Straley, and particularly if he gets traded. And I know they're not going to score any runs for him, but I also think there's a decent chance he gets traded, and I like the pitcher. I will like the occasional matchups. There are not a whole lot of great offenses in the NL East, and the ballparks are, for the most part, pretty friendly. Let's talk Estrada, though, because I think he's the guy who, you know, we've talked about a lot, has been really up and down, and, you know, they committed to him for another year. They like him, so do you like him?
A little bit. I mean, I always tend to like Estrada more than the average person, so he's probably my guy in this group. I'm with you on Straley. He's my other guy. And what's interesting about them is they're two very similar pitchers, heavy fly ball pitchers. That helps them keep their whip down. When it goes bad, it goes really bad. And decent strikeout rates. They don't get enough credit. They don't have high strikeout rates, but decent strikeout rates. There was an interesting article, probably played a lot more where I live, about Estrada just in the past week, where he talked about having a lot of troubles basically with insomnia in the middle of the season when his season went way downhill. He mentioned at the end of the season that it was a personal problem that led him to go downhill, but not an injury, which just left the imagination wide open. And then this recently said it was just a lot of trouble sleeping, stress around the trade deadline and his future. Things started going downhill. He couldn't sleep, and then things just snowballed. And then finally late in the season was able to relax a little more, get better sleep, feel more rested, and then have a little better bounce back late in the year. So that gave me like a little more hope for him. I just think maybe I like him out of this group because he also has had stretches where he's been really, really good, and the other pitchers in the group haven't.
Group three, Ivan Nova, Julie Chassin, Steven Matz, CC Sabathia, Matt Harvey. So I think from this group, I would like to compare the lottery ticket and the seemingly opposite. You know, Matz is really high upside, I think, and could do absolutely nothing. And Sabathia, I think, is going to take the ball 28 times and give you decent ratios and win 12 or 13 games and be CC Sabathia. Who would you rather have right now knowing nothing else? Would you rather have the lottery ticket, or would you rather have the guy whose floor and upside seemingly are almost right next to each other?
Yeah, I think it's all league size for me. In a 10 or 12 team league, I'd rather take Matt. If I have to, if I need to cut him 3 weeks into the season or something, I can find Sabathia or someone like him. In a 15 team league, or, well, they won't be in the same only league, but the bottom line, in a 15 team league or something really deep, I'd rather have Sabathia because I just can't risk, especially with there being a dearth of starting pitcher options on the waiver wire now. A few years ago, I would have been more likely to just chance it with Matz, but in a 15 team league, I just need the 25 to 30 starts from Sabathia, and if I miss the breakout from Matz, then I miss it. But in a 10-team league and a 12-team league, which is still the majority of league formats, I'll take Matz, and then I can just mess with that pitcher spot, you know, as the season goes along. How many innings do you think we get from Matz this year? Like, do you like him as a late-round pick at all?
I do. I like him as a very late sleeper. I would not want to count on him at all. But if I were set and had a last pick and he were still there, I'd love to take a flyer on him because, again, the upside is really high. But an over-under on innings, 100?
Yeah, and then there's been enough injury now that it does raise the question of when he's healthy, will he be the exact same pitcher that he was prior to having all these injuries? I think we've got one injury, and I can usually say, okay, well, he'll probably be fine when he comes back. But as the injuries pile up, you hope that he's just still the dynamic pitcher that he was at the beginning of his career. But I've got at least one more year of being interested. Even if this year doesn't go well, he goes way down the list.
All right. So that's gotten you pretty deep into starting pitchers. We will go shallower on starting pitchers, or deeper on a shallower pool of starting pitchers next week. Again, we start our position previews next week. It is February next week. We are almost back with baseball. This is the Fantasy 411. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks, Fred Zinke, for taking the time to talk.